Well, hello, friends. This is program number 12 of the Rays and the Initiations webinar commentary part 2. If all goes well, despite the fact that I have done quite a bit of writing on the 14 rules up to the point where this commentary began, I hope to be able to discuss it with you a little bit. I know it takes more time, perhaps, to listen to what I am bringing forth and to read, but I'm also hoping that there is some added value to the discussion. I will imagine that I hear your questions. We've just been reviewing the seven ways, or the one way with seven paths, of the way of higher evolution, and we've noticed that these seven paths are not necessarily related to the seven rays. They are not ray paths, though the factor of ray will be taken into consideration when the master chooses a particular path. And apparently in that choice, although it's completely free, which is kind of paradoxical, there's only one correct choice. So I imagine that the master who chooses incorrectly will realize the incorrectness of that choice and will somehow make his way onto a more suitable path. This was the case, apparently, with the Buddha, who chose to the path of earth service when it was not his path at all. And he did this out of extreme compassion. And there's a parallel there. The so-called sin of the Buddha is sin. How can we discuss such a thing? Is parallel to the sin or mistake of the planetary logos when he chose during the moon chain manifestation to release a great lower life from confinement prematurely. And this again out of compassion. So we do see how compassion has to be guided by wisdom if the plan and purpose are to be expressed. Well, those matters, that type of choice of such great entities is beyond our comprehension, but we can understand the principle that love, compassion must be guided by wisdom and by a very encompassing view of the needs of the whole. Sometimes love can be obstructive, and it is very interesting that while the Black Lodge uses the factor of intelligence developed to an extreme concrete degree in this solar system, in the next solar system we are told that the factor of love will be the inhibitory energy. It will be the energy by which they attempt to mislead and misguide others. Now, of course, the question is, in what form will cosmic evil express at that time? Maybe on our planet it will not, because perhaps at the judgment day in the next round it will be overcome, but the work of the Black Lodge is not completely overcome, and it is actually, after all, part of the plans of the Solar Logos. At least it's taken into consideration by the Solar Logos as he turns evil into good. It's not part of the plans and the reckoning of our planetary logos, and is a great obstacle for our planetary logos. Well, a little aside. Disciples are more apt to be interested in the ashrams from the angle of their own development. Well, so he's basically saying disciples are self-centered. It was my hope to make that into red, and I don't know why it did not work. Okay. They are not prone to remember that the life, progress, and purpose of the master not only determines the quality of the ashram, but that his own development and his eventual decisions are closely related to the ashram which he controls. So the life progress and purpose of the master not only determines the quality of the ashram, but that his own development and his eventual decisions are closely related to the ashram which he controls. In other words, the ashrams are limited by the limitations of the masters, which are the focal point of, let's see, an ashram. Let me put it that way. That'll be a little bit clearer. An ashram, he is limited by the limitations of the master, who is the focal point of a particular ashram. It is not easy for students to shift their attention away from the relation of the ashram to humanity as a whole. It's not easy for students to shift their attention away from the relation of the ashram to humanity as a whole, or to realize that this relation is secondary to the master, whose primary preoccupation is the unfoldment of the purposes of Sanat Kumara. Again, you know, an injunction for us that we should be more decentralized and not interpret things from a narrow and circumscribed point of view. Whenever we find ourselves to be the major theme of our thought, we should be suspicious of the type of thought that is unfolding. The more in an Aquarian manner that we can find ourselves simply as a unit in a larger process, and that would require great decentralization, the more likely we are to understand the divine plan and the purpose behind it. So the primary occupation of the master is the unfoldment of the purposes of Sanat Kumara and the attainment of that state of being which is significant of Shambhala. I think significant signifies the expression of the energies of Shambhala. The world of significance is the world of the spiritual triad, and the master. The master still lives in the world of the spiritual triad. So it points in the direction of, when something is significant, it signifies, it points that which is significant, points in the direction of that which it signifies. So, and the attainment of that state of being. Now, Master D.K. said he was an initiate of a certain degree, an initiate into the mysteries of being, which tells us that a master is an initiate into the world of being. He still is largely focused in Atma, the highest aspect of the spiritual triad, but increasingly we have been told he is responsive to the energies of Shambhala, responsive to the monad, and learning the nature of the energies of the monadic plane, where he will be finding his point of tension as a Chohan of the sixth degree. So again, we're decentralized here. It's not only the ashram helping humanity, right? Or the individual disciple. We are not only dealing with the ashram helping humanity or the individual disciple. Okay. Students need to bear in mind that one phase of preparation for future work is that which will succeed the initiation of decision. Okay, one phase of preparation for future work, you know, on the way of high revolution, is that which will succeed the initiation of decision. Let's just say the Well, let's just say the seventh initiation may still confine the journeying initiate to the solar system, and this is dependent upon the type, quality, and service rendered by the master as he conditions and controls his ashram. So it is the initiation of resurrection which will succeed the initiation of decision. And as a master prepares, a master is preparing for a future stage. Okay. A master is preparing for a future stage of service which succeeds the initiation of decision. In other words, for the stage of service which is enacted at the seventh degree. This I will attempt to enlarge upon under our next heading. It is useful, however, for aspirants to discipleship. Well, what level of discipleship are we talking about here? I mean, in a way, until we've taken the third degree, we are all aspirants, and discipleship ends at the third degree from one perspective, but from another, maybe it only begins at the third degree. Discipleship in relation to Sirius only begins at the third degree. So it is useful, however, for aspirants to discipleship, and above all, for those preparing for initiation and consequently already working in an ashram. So there is the idea that if you are preparing for true initiation at the third degree, then you are already working in an ashram. So those initiates of the second degree and who are preparing for the third, and since those two can be taken in the same life, if the second degree is taken toward the middle or later middle part of life, one can easily begin preparing for the third degree. So it is useful for such disciples and initiates to get a different point of view and to begin to unfold within themselves a new sensitivity to impression coming from sources higher than the hierarchy itself. This would have to be, you know, impression from Shambhala. So we are working on receiving this different point of view in a way far beyond our comprehension, but certainly expanding our understanding of the larger picture and putting things into perspective. You know, big things in a small circle look smaller in a big circle. So our circle of consciousness is expanding, and things which loomed perhaps unduly large are taking their proper place proportionately. This involves in them a new and higher type of orientation. And though it remains as yet impossible of attainment, there is definite developing value. Okay, DK sees this in a grasp of the concept and the effort of the abstract mind and intuitive perception to seize upon and reflect upon a new and, well, for us, truly, entirely foreign concept. So at this point, DK points out the value of our study of such abstruse material as we are now studying. Ah, well, you know, you can think of what use is it for me to study this, but the abstract mind will expand, and that is an aspect of the mind of our planetary logos, and our intuitive perception of the Buddhic plane will grow in acuity, and these we need. We have to become representatives of Buddhi Manas, is it not so? The higher reflective process is to the disciple who is working in an ashram what aspiration is to the student upon the probationary path and the early stages of the path to discipleship. So quite obvious, you know, that this material is not written for those on the early, or in the early phases of the path of discipleship. And so, instead of aspiring, we who are engaged seriously in the study of this book are engaging in a much needed higher reflective process. Yes, it is very speculative, and it stretches our abstract mind, and occasionally it evokes in us a clearer presentation of truth via the intuition. It seems removed from many things necessary in the world today, but even amidst the decay of the old world, I sometimes wonder, you know, Master Decay has provided such fantastic information that a close study of it will contribute to the disintegration, the decay of previous thought forms and notions about the way the world works. So he's kind of contributing by his name, or the name we know him by, to a disintegration of our old preoccupations, our old notions of discipleship and reality. I had a friend who told me that D.K. Jwalku was not his name at all, and explained to me at the time what his real name was, and how D.K. or Jwalku was a derivation of it, and then since that time, this friend has forgotten his own explanation. But I'm sure it will emerge for us as needed. So this is not about, students of this material are not treading the early stages of the path of discipleship. In the latter case, the aspirant's emotional body becomes responsive to the principle of buddhi. This is very needed because we know that the buddhic energy must flood that stage of vibratory reality we call the astral body, reaching him via the love petals of the egoic lotus. And this is desirable, and it's not something that we should give up. But in the more exalted position, the disciple becomes aware, well, that is all it is, of the possibility of impression reaching him from the cosmic astral plane via monadic consciousness. So this is a higher type of work, and let us see if we are among those who are becoming aware of the possibility, not aware of the actual cosmic astral impression which the masters do receive, but via monadic awareness. So some stimulation of the connection of the monad with the disciple's consciousness is activated. And it does tell us that there is a definite connection between the cosmic astral plane and the monad. And of course, you know, it continues via the buddhic plane and to the astral body as well. Note that I simply say the possibility, for there is at this stage no assured recognition of this goal, though we may say, though it may be achieved, there is no guarantee. It is an impression which is to the disciple preparing for one of the higher initiations what an occult theory is to an aspirant on a very much lower level. Well, let's see here. This higher reflective process is to the disciple who is working in an ashram. Well, you know, that can happen. Let's just say that can happen even following the second degree. It can happen before the second degree. So it is useful, however, for aspirants to discipleship, and above all for those preparing for initiation, and consequently already working in an ashram. That is a key idea, that if we are really preparing for true initiation, we are already working in an ashram, and this involves true initiation. To get a different point of view and a new sensitivity coming from sources higher. So, yes, it is open to us. We are oriented in a different way, the abstract mind and the intuitive perception are being stimulated, and this is a higher reflective process, let's just say, for disciples preparing for initiation, and thus working already in an ashram, even though it can be a little bit peripheral, that type of work. So we are not to be considered aspirants in the usual sense, though until we have definitely taken the third degree, we are aspirants. In this latter case, the aspirant's emotional body becomes responsive to the principle of buddhi, reaching him via the love petals of the egoic lotus, but in the more exalted situation, the disciple to initiation becomes aware, for that is all it is, of the possibility of an impression reaching him from the cosmic astral plane via monadic levels of awareness. We do have to remember the monad is on the, you know, numerical resonance holds here. The monad is on the second plane of the cosmic physical plane, and the cosmic astral plane is the second counting cosmic planes from below. So there's a numerical resonance of 2, and also 6, of course. Note what I say as simply the possibility, for there's no assured recognition of this goal, although it may come for some. It is an impression which is to the disciple preparing for one of the higher initiations. Now he seems to switch gear here. What are these? Would these be 3 and beyond? What an occult theory is to an aspirant on very much lower levels. So the only way in which I can give any faintest idea of the higher reaches of the initiate consciousness will be through reference to lower grasped capacities and the presentation of undefinable truths in terms of that which has been defined, and which to these higher states of awareness are in the nature of seed thoughts. Well, that makes sense. He has to explain higher states in terms of analogies to lower states which we grasp. Now, as you will see, I have not inserted the italics beyond this point, and I always try to do that, so I will take a tiny moment in time and do that. Okay. So, the only way I can give any faintest idea, he's basically telling us, is through analogy in relation to what we already do know. These are undefinable truths, and they become seed thoughts when presented in terms of that which has been defined, that is, that which we at least somewhat do know. Some small grasp of the nature of the consciousness of Shambhala will emerge as we study this section of the treatise for the higher levels of the cosmic etheric plane, let's say, you know, the monadic and logoic levels, where Shambhala is primarily focused, are permeated with energies emanating from the cosmic astral plane and the cosmic mental plane. Well, let's say, the monadic plane will be permeated with energies from the cosmic astral plane, and the logoic plane, perhaps, by energies from the cosmic mental plane. There is a strong Leonian character to the logoic plane, and one thinks of the causal body of the solar logos on the cosmic mental plane, and also the relation of the number 5 to Leo. It seems to make sense. Now, the word consciousness has to be carefully looked at, because sometimes DK says, tells us that the work of the spiritual triad is beyond consciousness. But we have to understand that he is speaking of consciousness as we usually grasp that term. Because, of course, the planetary logos has consciousness, the solar logos has consciousness, and so forth. So when Master DK speaks of moving beyond consciousness, he's talking about going into a non-dual realm of apprehension. We can still speak of it in terms of consciousness, but the subject-object relationship, as we normally understand it, is missing. So, a non-dual realm of apprehension, in which the usual subject-object relationship is transcended. Okay. So it's the highest levels, the higher levels of the cosmic etheric plane. Maybe he's leaving out, you know, the Buddhic and Atmic levels, which are really under the third aspect of Brahma, and rising to the two higher or occult levels of the cosmic physical plane, one connected with the second aspect, that's the monadic plane, and the other with the first aspect, that's the logoic. Really, what happens on the monadic plane is a kind of a combination of the first and second aspects. So, the higher levels of the cosmic etheric plane are permeated with the energies emanating from the cosmic astral plane and from the cosmic mental plane, and I've given you my impression of how that may be divided. These energies playing through and directed by the great lives who form a permanent nucleus of the council chamber at Shambhala. And I suppose that nucleus will be found on the logoic plane, is my impression. Found on the logoic plane, where the council chamber is found. Now, some lives are transiently related to the council chamber. They are not, as it were, permanent members of the council chamber in Shambhala. The Buddhas of activity and the esoteric Kumaras, they are permanent members. I don't know who else are permanent members. We would have, in a way, the Sanat Kumara surrounded by 6 permanent members, 3 relatively exoteric and 3 esoteric Kumaras all. So these energies playing through and directed by the 3 great lives who form a permanent nucleus of the council chamber at Shambhala, maybe it is 7, do condition and are the impelling, motivating, and relating power behind all the evolutionary processes on the lower levels. So I'm assuming, how to spell it, huh? That these 7, perhaps, are located on the logoic plane. Monads are found on the monadic plane, but maybe the very essence of the monad, the volatile essence, the flying essence, really belongs in the Sea of Fire, where we imagine that the council chamber is found or focused. That point of tension, which is the council chamber, has its vibratory frequency of the same nature as the Sea of Fire. Yet the life and consciousness of the hierarchy are very different to the life and consciousness of those who constitute the great center called Shambhala. Somewhere he gives, analogies relating, I believe, the lives in Shambhala in their relationship to the lives of hierarchy, as the life, or a life like Sanatkumara in relation to a master, as that master would be in relationship to the most lowly developed human being. That's an extraordinary thought, but a number of Mahamanvantaras do separate them. If we can be sure of the exact meaning of Mahamanvantara, sometimes the term is used to mean an entire Mahakalpa, or the duration of a solar system, and sometimes a lesser cycle. The developing sensitivity to increasingly high impression, which is the result of the final initiatory process, is the only way in which the distinction and goal become apparent. So the final initiatory process is, beyond that of master. So this is beyond the level of master, and so only one who enters these very high phases can detect the difference. There it is. Who can detect the difference between the lights who carry, well, is it the lights which carry out the will of God, and those who work within the spiritual hierarchy of our planet? So it's the only way, if we reach the stages of the final initiatory process, maybe, the 7th, 8th, 9th initiation, then we will know. Just as those who read and study these ideas are occupied with concepts and thoughts, totally unrealized and wholly inexplicable, does it inspire confidence? Well, it certainly inspires the aspiration. Just as those who read and study these ideas are occupied with concepts and thoughts totally unrealized and wholly inexplicable, although we've been making an attempt to explain a little, but we can take the Tibetan at his word that really what we're dealing with is, in practical terms at least, wholly inexplicable, and sometimes even senseless. Uh-huh. Well, maybe not to us. I should read further in the sentence. So just as those who read and study these ideas are occupied with concepts and thoughts totally unrealized and wholly inexplicable and sometimes even senseless to the ordinary everyday businessman in the street, and he is an intelligent person, so there are ranges of thought and eternal extraplanetary concepts which are equally unknown and temporarily inexplicable. He's cautious there because eventually they become explicable to the initiate working in the ashram of some master. So let's just say, as must be obvious, the initiate doesn't know everything, and so much is beyond his range of understanding. So we have always the law of analogy coming to our aid here. And let us say this book will be read by initiates, even though he has said he's not writing for initiates of the third degree, yet I cannot help but think that even initiates of the third degree would greatly benefit from some of what is in this book. some of the rules of which pertain to the fourth degree, and even, I think, at times, to the fifth degree. But maybe there are other ways by which such initiates gain information. So there are also ranges of thought and eternal, extraplanetary concepts, you know, concepts beyond the range of our planet, and maybe beyond the range of all planets. Would that mean extra-systemic concepts, okay, which are equally unknown and temporarily inexplicable to the initiate working in an ashram under some master? Well, eventually, but eventually the initiate will know. When a student realizes that the great universal oneness which he associates with monadic consciousness is only the registration of impressions localized and therefore limited and defined within the etheric levels of the cosmic physical plane, as, you know, the etheric union does give that sense of oneness, he can perhaps grasp the implications of the wonder which will be revealed to the initiate who can transcend the entire cosmic physical plane. Our seven planes of the human, superhuman, and divine worlds. The divine worlds are monadic and logoic. Logic, logoic. And function upon another cosmic level. More probably the cosmic astral plane. This is what the treading of the way of higher evolution enables a master to do. Well, Master DK tells us, at least when he was writing these books, that he had not been to the cosmic astral plane directly, and therefore he does not know what is found there. Perhaps it can be said that the Christ and the Buddha know somewhat of that. I'm going to repeat this because it's such a, you know, I don't know if I've ever read this book carefully enough. But when forced literally to think of every word, a careful reading does eventuate. And so I'm quite amazed at what I see here. I'm remembering Mary Bailey, you know, I told you that. You know, she said, well, the rays and the initiations, it's my Bible. And I couldn't understand it at the time because, well, Treatise on Cosmic Fire was my Bible. Maybe just the difference in ray orientation. But I can begin to understand why she said that now, some 40 years later. When the student realizes, well, at least 35 years later, when the student realizes that the great universal oneness which he associates with monadic consciousness, which he thinks is probably, you know, the peak of possible realization. I've seen many Buddhists who think that, and those who deem enlightenment to the end of what is possible for the human consciousness. But, of course, DK expands, DK, a great Tibetan Buddhist of his own, in his own right, he expands our awareness far beyond what is generally accepted as the limits of what the human being can achieve. When the student realizes that the great universal oneness which he associates with monadic consciousness is only the registration of impressions, localized and therefore limited and defined within the etheric levels of the cosmic physical plane. In other words, this is, let's just say, a kind of a consciousness localized on the cosmic, on the higher levels of the cosmic physical plane, he can perhaps grasp the implications of the wonder, which will be revealed to the initiate who can transcend the entire cosmic physical plane. Our seven planes of the human, that is three planes, superhuman, two more, thus making five, and divine worlds, two more, thus making seven, and function under, upon another cosmic level. I think word wonder is the key. And we have to be ready for wonder and not to imagine that when we become enlightened, so to speak, there is no progression in the intensity and scope of that enlightenment. It's just, you know, DK has opened up such a door here, leading, you know, to cosmic destinations. And the wonder can only increase. He talks about the coming wonder of the new age. And no doubt it will be wondrous, but the wonder never ceases in our ongoing return to the center, which is, in a way, infinitely peripheral when considering the absolute. So eye hath not seen and ear hath not heard the wonders which will impress themselves upon the advancing consciousness as it returns to its true, to the realization of its true identity. One interesting fact emerges out of all this comparative work, and this mode of analogical teaching. You know, I sometimes think that Gemini has to have a very strong connection with the Master DK, or he with Gemini. And I was told also by maybe one who knows maybe that Libra was important in his ashram, in his horoscope. And therefore, comparison under the third ray which comes through Libra is very a common way of expressing that type of energy. And at HPB, who did this fantastic comparative work, had loads of Libra in her chart. And DK noted her association with Libra. In the chart, you look at it, it's pretty much Venus and the Moon. But I think, you know, maybe there's even more to it. So one interesting fact emerges out of all this comparative work and this mode of analogical thinking. No matter what our ray, we have to get used to this ability to look below and see above, look above and see below analogy. And that is that the word spiritual refers neither to religious matters, so-called, nor to the path of discipleship or the path of the major and higher initiations. But to relationships on every level of the cosmic physical plane, to every level, from the lowest to the highest. He wants to rescue this term from its captivation by the narrow type of thinking promoted by the Black Lodge, which sees only the religious point of view under the sixth ray as spiritual. That's one of his major tasks here. Because he says it's a great victory by the Black Lodge, this isolating of the term, the narrowing of the term. The word spiritual relates to attitudes, to relationships, to the moving forward from one level of consciousness, no matter how low or gross from the point of view of the higher level of contact, to the next. So it's about progress, isn't it? Even if that progress seems from quite a low level to a level that's still considered low, though a little higher than the one from which it moved. So the word spiritual relates to attitudes, to relationships, to the moving forward, excuse me, from one level of consciousness, no matter how low or gross, from the point of view of a higher level of contact to the next. It is related to the power to see the vision, even if that vision is materialistic, is seen from the angle of the higher registration of possibility. It's all relative here, and if there is advancement, he's pretty well saying that, isn't he? You know, that if there is advancement, there is spirituality. Advancement is spiritual. The word spiritual refers to every effect of the evolutionary processes that drives man forward from one range of sensitivity and of responsiveness to impression to another. So that which is non-spiritual is that which falls back into a lesser stage or insists on promoting only the stage reached. So if consciousness falls back or simply stays at its present level, treading water as it were, it is not spiritual. It relates to the expansion of consciousness, so that the unfoldment of the organs of sensory perception in primitive man, or in the awakening infant, are just as surely spiritual, spiritual events, as participation in the initiatory process. Wow. All right, well, we have to broaden our point of view here and not use that term spiritual in any parochial or limited sense. Any type of real advancement is spiritual. The development of the so-called irreligious man into a sound and effective businessman with all the necessary perception and equipment for success is as much a spiritual unfoldment in that individual's experience as the taking of an initiation by a disciple in the ashram. So we begin to look out at how all people advance and what their next step may be, and we promote in them and support and encourage that which is their next step. Okay, so the upshot of this is we support everyone's next step, even if relatively a lower step from a higher point of view. So our attitude towards spirituality has to be to promote advancement of a true kind any place we can find it. There is spurious advancement. People go off on glamorous and illusory paths and think they are advancing, but in fact no real advancement is occurring. And then even though there is the illusion of great attainment, it's not spiritual, even though the term spiritual is used all the time to describe what such people think they are achieving. The assumption by Orthodox church people that the word spiritual connotes profound and effective interest in Orthodox religion is not borne out by the facts of spiritual life. And maybe such an interest is no real attainment, but maybe a retardation based on prideful, exclusivistic thinking, or just maybe exclusivistic. I think that says what I want to say. Someday, when the world is increasingly led by its initiates, this erroneous assumption will be discarded, and it will be realized that all activity which drives the human being forward towards some form of development, physical, emotional, intuitional, so forth, is essentially spiritual in nature and is indicative of the livingness of the inner divine entity which always drives forward. The type of motion is what's called progress onward. Until the day of its return, its realized return to its own nature. We are all of us spirit, we are all of us life, but we are life in an unself-realized form for a good part of our human evolution. Spirituality, in terms of spiritual occultism, is not what it seems to be to many Orthodox thinkers, especially those of a religious persuasion. It kind of invalidates the value of many other approaches, which are equally important to the spiritual success of the human race. The day will come, though, right, when increasingly the world is led by its initiates. It's not really happening so much yet, but you look at some of the truly great figures. I suppose one of those figures is Nelson Mandela, at least in the present time, and maybe, you know, certainly Bishop Tutu in his own way, a highly advanced soul. And they were leading aspects of the world. South Africa was important in terms of its struggle and how to resolve that struggle. It was really resolved by an initiate. And was this a third degree initiate? Maybe, certainly a higher probationary initiate on the stage of human history. I have felt it necessary to point this out because it will become apparent as we read and study this section of the treatise that the master, moving forward into higher areas of impressionability, may, this section of the treatise, that the master, moving forward into higher areas of impressionability, may not and frequently will not express this development in terms of what we now regard as spiritual, what is now regarded as spiritual, by the religious devotee and by the man used to the wording and the terminology of the churchmen of all faiths. After all, you know, the masters expressed through all the seven ashrams, and not all of them, by far, are using the terminology nor share the objectives of the average churchman. The advanced churchman will realize that his method of achieving spirituality is only one of the possible methods. We have to learn to recognize as spiritual anyone who causes a real advancement in the human condition. We have to sort of de-churchify our concepts. And of course, this has happened greatly in the last 100 years, when so much that has been forced upon the people by the churches is strongly questioned. The discoveries of science, my brother, or the production of some great work in literature or in the field of art, are just as much an evidence of spiritual unfoldment as the rhapsodies of the mystic or the registration by the so-called occultist of a contact with the hierarchy. I think, you know, not everyone who thinks that he or she is an occultist really is. We're more in the category of students of occultism and so-called occultists. Even the term is problematic because of its frequent misinterpretation in the human consciousness of today. There will, however, come a point in the experience of all those thus making a spiritual approach along some specialized line where a meeting place will become apparent. You know, it's kind of like rising up the sides of the pyramid or rising up the two outer legs of a triangle. The apex will be reached by all those who rise there. It's climbing a mountain, right? There's a point of synthesis, realized synthesis at the peak point, when all those directions which seemed so distinct will meet in one objective. So there will, however, come a point in the experience of all those thus making a spiritual approach along some specialized line, where in a meeting place will become apparent where a joint goal will be unitedly recognized, where essential unity under diversity of forms, of methods, and of techniques will be acknowledged. We can see, you know, the hierarchy has this kind of consciousness, obviously. And where pilgrims on all the ways of approach will know themselves to be one band of demonstrators of the divine. Now, this works out on our way to hierarchy, and it also works out on the way of higher evolution. This will also work out at the, it's Pleiadian meeting place of all the paths on the way of higher evolution. I think that is the hub of the wheel, and even if the different paths take us to a number of different constellations, there will be one destination, and we will finally realize that all paths are one. It is of the nature of any synthesis. The planetary synthesis demonstrates this as well, as the three synthesizing planets absorb the life principles of the other planets, and eventually from three synthesizers there are two, and from two there are one, and from one there comes a union with the solar logos. All is absorbed into a greater unity, and all goals are seen as one goal. I guess the question arises as to whether eventual absorption in one solar logos does occur, or whether there are these outgoing streams of spiritual adventure which are only finally absorbed in the Pleiades. Little more. One such meeting place is upon the periphery of the hierarchy during the stage immediately prior to acceptance into an ashram. Now, you know, such a meeting place is what was experienced, I think, by a number of the Tibetan's disciples. Experienced by a number of the Tibetan's disciples. They came together on the periphery of the ashram. There are many different ray paths led them all into one unified attempt to work with Master DK and he with them. It is interesting to note that on a worldwide scale, the world disciple humanity, it's often called that, is today on the verge of this major awakening and joint registration of a unity not hitherto reached. You know, it's sometimes expressed by the words, we're all in this together. And when ecological crises threaten us, we certainly realize that. The growth of the spirit of internationalism and inclusiveness, the inclusiveness of the scientific attitude, where truth is more important than where that truth came from, and the spread of a universal humanitarian welfare movement are all indicative of this meeting place. So, meeting as a group before absorption. Okay. Just need to learn how to spell it. Well, another such meeting place is recorded and entered, symbolically speaking, when the third initiation is taken, and still another is realized at the time of the seventh initiation. I wonder if the new group of world servers has something to do with this meeting place before the third is taken. The new group of world servers, perhaps? And still another at the time of the seventh. I guess they're coming together at the sixth degree in a group that is offering something of value to the planet. The sixth degree project for the planet of all those who are making or have made their choice which may take them in different directions. These all register development in group awareness as well as the recognition of the individual initiate as to what is happening within the consciousness aspect of humanity. A great universalization is in progress under Aquarius. And we say the growth of group consciousness, even in humanity, and not just in its most spiritual aspects, humanity realizing itself as the world disciple. So this will be then the end of Rays and Initiations webinar commentaries for part two of program 12. And, well, we're on page, I think it's 362 to 365, and we'll be beginning Rays and Initiation webinar commentary program 13, which will begin at 366. Okay, friends, it's deep material and very interesting, and we have to think deeply to absorb at least some of it. So we will continue in our effort to do so. See you soon. Okay.